TBRI.
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 TOVD.
TBRI.
TBRI. Trust-based relational intervention.
TBRI is an attachment-based
trauma-informed intervention
that is designed to meet the complex needs
of vulnerable children.
TBRI uses empowering principles
to address physical needs,
connecting principles for attachment needs,
and correcting principles to disarm fear-based behaviors.
While TBRI is based on years of attachment, sensory processing, and neuroscience research,
the heartbeat of TBRI is connection.
Hello and welcome to the TBRI podcast. You're listening to Season 7, Episode 3. On this show, we talk all about TBRI, or Trust-Based Relational Intervention. We talk about different elements of the model itself, and also about how TBRI is applied in various communities of care and practice. I'm Emily Pickett, producer of the podcast, and today we are back with part two of our conversation with Cindy Lee. In this episode, Sarah and Cindy continue their conversation and touch on all kinds of things. They talk about the barriers or speed bumps that hinder caregivers and professionals from fully engaging in trust-based relationships. They talk about system-wide TBRI implementation, and they talk about utilizing TBRI in specialized populations such as the FASD and autism communities. We were just barely able to touch on those last two topics due to time, so we will certainly have Cindy back. Thank you so much for listening, and please enjoy part two of our conversation with Cindy Lee.
Well, as you're talking about families, the bio, the foster, the adopt, being able to implement TBRI, or even when they come to you in group, whether it's in groups or whether it's through the HALO program or however they get to you, what do you see as the biggest barrier to them being able to do it?
I mean, attachment is going to be the biggest barrier that we see. Beyond that, there's a few more of potential barriers, and we don't call them barriers. We just call them speed bumps, because they're, it's just like we've just got to detour for a second and do something else and then come straight back. But there's a few of them. So attachment is one. We see families who any member of the family who's experiencing some kind of neurodivergency, we see that as a potential speed bump where we just have to adjust content to meet needs. And then we see untreated mental illness in either caregiver or child, that's going to interfere with the journey. Unmet basic needs. So there's just a handful of small things that we just have to address alongside. Addiction is one of them as well, if a teen is addicted to a substance or a parent.
Okay. I feel like I'm remembering a handout that I had forgotten about. is this true? Do you have something that it talks about this, and I'm remembering it because you're saying all the right words?
Yes, absolutely. It's something called the healing roadmap.
It all just came to light. I was like, she shifted my barriers to speed bumps.
Then
I was like, no, it's totally fine. Mm-hmm. I actually thought in the moment, like, boy, isn't that a Cindy Lee thing to like get right back to the positive thing of like, it's just a little speed bump. We got this. Okay. How about with professionals? Speed bumps
with professionals. I would say that probably the same thing, just that attachment piece, but then also, and I would load this for caregivers as well, that self-care piece should never be underestimated. I know we talk about it so flippantly, like, oh, you need to do self-care,
right?
But taking time to rest and refuel it for professionals is vital to a professional's ability to be successful. And then I would say too, to rely on the family's ability to heal their own relationships. You're just a guide, and TBRI is an incredible tool. And so as the guide, use the tool, but rely on the families to navigate and use the tool. You're just guiding. They have inherently within them what they need to heal. You're providing them with the appropriate tools. So just letting that play out in front of you and being confident and calm as you let it play out is probably one of the best stances that we could take as professionals working with families.
Yeah, I can remember when we were first learning TBRI when I worked in foster care, that it was like we would get so frustrated as a team when we would ask them to try like one thing and they try it one time and that didn't work, and we'd be like, oh, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And then, like, thank God we had a team at that time. It was a Travis County Collaborative, so there were a lot of us that were practitioners on our team, and there was at least one person standing up going, well, just remind them to try it again, mm-hmm. right? Like, just because you do it once and it doesn't work, like, we need a lot of repetition. So just that coming back week after week after week and mm-hmm. pursuing it, because it's not an easy change. I mean, right, I'm 10 years in two, mm-hmm. and I'm still literally like reaching out to my support saying, like, I've got this situation going on, help me. We all absolutely need a board.
Yeah. And I would say along those lines, like, we don't need to sell TBRI. It's mm-hmm. it's hard as professionals, especially when we first discover it and first learn it, like, we want to spread it with the world because it works and it helps people and they feel better and they are on the trajectory for healing. But we don't have to sell it.
Right.
We just have to be present and start sprinkling it in mm-hmm. and teaching the concepts, and just be calm ourselves mm-hmm. and allow it to unfold. And I think that's, if we try to push something or sell something or be like, this is the best, the greatest, we're going to automatically get some of our families pulling back. So
right.
we just have right. to have a sense of calm in how we bring it to the table. It's just hard because we're excited.
Yeah. It makes so much sense.
Yes.
We just want them to get it because we all know how it feels, right? Like mm-hmm. I know how it feels when somebody TBRIs me.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so, yeah, we just, it's a desperation. I think also, like, to encourage our professionals, there are so many people that desperately want it, that if you run into, you know, a roadblock of somebody who doesn't, just keep going. Because I keep thinking, like, in schools, that one teacher that wants the whole school to get it, like, if you'll just get it in your classroom, people are going to start asking what's going on, right? That one counselor that wants the whole practice to get it, like, just use it in your practice and let the outcomes begin mm-hmm. to speak for themselves, and people will become more curious about it. And then many moons ago now, not 10 years ago, but you probably know the date better than 2017, 2016, you started the Oklahoma TBRI Collaborative for Children.
Yes.
And so you are building, a whole force there in Oklahoma of TBRI practitioners and TBRI trained people. And I know you guys go all over the place and are probably very, very tired from all of the work you're doing, but that training in particular. So people hear about these things. They come to practitioner training, or they just hear about the collaboratives that are happening in other communities. And they're like, I want that. And what they want is where you are right now.
Right. Yes.
Where would you tell somebody to start?
I think I would say to go through the open doors. Where are your open doors, and what skill set can you bring to the table? So for us, we just got lucky that we got in as an early collaborative before the demand was as high as it was. So we mm-hmm. got that extra oversight and permission from mm-hmm. the Institute to do the collaborative. But I, one of our early mistakes in, you know, we're like statewide implementation of TBRI. That is what we're doing.
Right.
And that is what we're doing. And that is what we're still doing. But there were all these, like, who are the stakeholders and who are the ones that are really going to help us propel this forward? And so we would start knocking on doors. Well, what happened was we were knocking on doors who might not have been interested, even if we thought they were stakeholders.
Right.
And so one of our biggest lessons was go through the open door, because mm-hmm. you never know if someone's there and willing, those are the people that are going to push you forward, because they're going to be the ones talking about it.
Yep.
And so, a perfect example of that is our now director of child welfare is a TBRI practitioner.
Golly,
I know, but we didn't say, oh, we want the director of child welfare to be a TBRI practitioner. We brought her and invested in her early, because she had heard about TBRI. Her daughter is a teacher. She was interested in TBRI for her daughter. Mm-hmm. And so she became a practitioner years before she became the director of child welfare. So my biggest advice is just go through the open door, because it'll just start to grow and it'll start to move. Mm-hmm. And then you wake up and you have all the open doors that you could ever ask for.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember at the like very, very beginning when you were at the Institute, and I think you and Darren and I were chatting, and it was when he first said, yes, Sarah, you go and you be the our representative for Oklahoma. And you were like so excited. And I remember being like, oh my gosh, like what is happening? And then you started talking and you were like, well, I've basically been sitting in coffee shops with people for 2 years talking about this, mm-hmm. and just talking like, just like, mm-hmm. let's meet up. Let's mm-hmm. meet up. And I have a feeling that's where you figured out like, whoop, that one's an open door. That one's not. Like, it was never go out and have a big giant meeting in those early days. It was like, let's sit and have coffee and let me share with you about this mm-hmm. thing that I know about and how mm-hmm. I think we could bring our community together around it. And man, we had a lot of fun in those early days out training and doing the crazy things. And I think about, I was sitting when you said Palomar, I was thinking about going over there and training and Miss Judy being there. And mm-hmm. she's just a talk about an angel, man. She is something. Okay. The next step, community and counselors, sort of collaboratively that you've done. What is the Collaborative Impact Project?
So the Collaborative Impact Project is, nationally, it's fair to say that we are currently experiencing a mental health crisis. And so one of the things that we recognize is that individuals, whomever they are that are hurting, need effective, efficient counseling. Like the days of 1 hour a week sessions are not what we need right now. We need healing faster. And so in the state of Oklahoma, we recognize that at our office at HALO, we could do one of two things. We could continue to hire more and more and more and more therapists and train them up, or we could just train up therapists all over the city. And so we went for a grant, got the grant, and we're training now. The first year it was 100 therapists. We were training them in internal family systems therapy, training them in making sense of your worth, and training them with permissions from the Institute, TBRI. So our goal with the Collaborative Impact Project is to create a mental health army in the state of Oklahoma. So wherever people land, their therapist is highly trained to meet the needs of the families in front of them. And so we're now about to finish our second 100, and we have funding for the next 3 years. So by the time it's said and done, those therapists will impact thousands and thousands of children and families all across the state of Oklahoma. And the reason that our therapists aren't highly trained in these techniques, well, we know how hard it is to get to TBRI practitioner training, but mm-hmm. also it's a price tag to have all of these types of trainings. And our therapists today, just coming out of school, don't have the funding to get to the highest quality trainings that they need to help the families in front of them. So this is a way that we can offer that training to them without that funding barrier, and then also helping the Institute spread TBRI even further. And then we stay connected with them, and we're a cohesive group of mental health professionals that are serving vulnerable populations in the state.
Man, I just think it's like, you know, I think when you shift your lens from the work I do to the work we can do, and like, you obviously have a gift for rallying the community to even financially support what you want to do. I mean, like the idea of going from a private practice therapist to the CEO that's literally providing training for now your second 100, and you said you have 2 more years to go, so it'll be 400 therapists within the community that have nothing to do with HALO other than coming there to get their thing, it's like that true gift of serving the community. And I think it's like one of those things that it's hard to do, right? Sometimes it can be hard to do because we want to grow our own thing. But I hope that people can continue with the framework of like, our own thing is the collective impact of childhood trauma. And we're going to fight together for that, no matter who, you know, whose roof you sit under to do it. It doesn't matter. We need every single person on board to make it happen across the community. And I think you're right, nationwide, because you go and try to find a therapist these days and you're kind of out of luck, right? Everybody is maxed and tired or don't have the training that you feel like you need for your own personal healing. And so like, man, I think you guys are going to start to see a big shift in where Oklahoma lands, just across the board in those mental health numbers, because people are going to really start to experience some healing. And, you know, talk about like a true barrier. I mean, the financial impact of the training that you're, that these people are getting in 1 year, it could potentially be, you know, a huge chunk of their entire annual salary. Like there's no way you would save up for one of those for a long time. Okay. So one thing we do, and I know that we taxed you a lot on this, Darren recently said, if we have Cindy Lee that we can call on, then we should be calling on Cindy Lee to, when we don't know what to tell counselors. So we send a lot of counselors your way. What do you think they've come to practitioner training. They're so excited. And then they like, we always tell practitioners on Friday, like you're going to go back Monday and you're probably going to get a little beat up. Just be ready because you're excited and everybody else has no idea what you've just gone through. What do you tell a counselor? What do you think their number one need is when they show up on the Zoom to seek your advice?
Hands down, application. Okay. And not necessarily just application in general, but application to my format. So that what those 1 hour week sessions, because that's how many of the, just speaking to counselors, that's how many counselors are operating. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to figure out, how do I take this, the awesomeness of TBRI, and then break it down into these 1 hour week sessions. What does a session even look like if we're incorporating TBRI? Which aspects do I need to start with? What do I need to include? Where do I go with all of it? And so that's usually the number one thing that they're asking me about, is how does this work within my counseling setting? Okay. And then beyond that, they just want to know about the hope and encouragement pieces.
Yeah.
How is it working? How has it impacted your families? And so those two things combined are the number, probably the two things I get asked most about from counselors.
Yeah. So how do I do it in a 1 hour format once a week? And really? Okay. This is really going to work. I have an hour a week.
Yes, like, you know, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
I think it was Amber on your team that said, like, pre-TBRI, it felt like walking through peanut butter is so hard and so tiresome. But once she could really start teaching those application pieces, that she felt like the peanut butter was gone and the families began to really latch on.
Absolutely.
Okay. What about, you're a leader in many, many ways. What do you think leaders trying to do TBRI in an organization need to know?
I feel like one of the things that most leaders are coming to have a discussion about is, again, they want community. Our leaders want community. Our executives are isolated and alone in a lot of the work that they do. So when we come together, a lot of it is just, it's like the vision casting and the community and I got you. I see you. Oh, I've been there. How'd you handle it? This is how I handle it. This is what we did. This is how we went. So much of it when we're talking to leaders is the community that's already there because we have similar experiences in our positions, but then it's the vision pieces that start to unfold because oftentimes our leaders do have they have the ability and the resources most often to do something big, but they want to learn from the people who've gone before them, which is absolutely brilliant. That's what I do. That's what I call spend time with other, like Jeff and Mary Margaret. How are you doing your things? And that's our Georgia Collaborative. So that connectedness of just, how do I do this? How do I implement TBRI in my entire organization? And how does that filter down to the people that we're serving? It's a lot of big visions, system-wide shifts.
Yeah, I remember when, you know, back in the foster care days, I feel like I've said that 17 times today, but whatever. We decided as a senior leadership team that we were going to do this, and we had, you know, six offices across the state and all different sizes. But, you know, we're serving a lot of kids and we had a lot of staff and we had not been leading them well. And we literally like shut the door to our little tiny boardroom in our Austin office. And we fought like cats and dogs to try to figure out how we were going to do it. Like, what are we going to do? And we made like the commitment at that time, behind these doors, we figure it out. And when we go out there, we're unified. And we started to look at all of our policies, all of our practices, all of our procedures, all of our forms, right? Like it's a huge undertaking to shift your entire organization if you weren't born through the lens of TBRI, right?
Like, right. Yes.
It's a whole lot of punitive crap out there. And I remember the first thing we did was we said, how do we empower our people? How do we empower our team? And so we just did little bitty things. And all of a sudden it was like the team kind of started to look at us like something's weird here. Mm-hmm. Like this, we never said like we're doing TBRI. And then we like put intentional connection opportunities in. And then when we would correct, our first line of correction was always a developmental plan to help you improve. But also the second part of that is if you were doing a really great job, you also got a developmental plan on how we could get you into a promoted position. Mm-hmm. Because we were trying to pour in. But I'm going to tell you, it was about a year and a half down the road before any of our teams across the entire state started to put the pieces together of what was happening. It was like a brutal, brutal exercise in dedication and patience, because all of a sudden at an all staff meeting, somebody said, things feel really different around here. And you're like, yeah, no kidding. Like, I've been trudging through the mud with this for years. So
yes,
to our leaders, like, oh, God bless you all, because this is no joke what you're trying to engage with and meet those needs. And then we already talked about, you know, what to do if you're wanting to start a collaborative, start small. The last thing I wanted to talk to you about was your work with kids with FASD, kids with autism, and how we do TBRI with them. But I'm sort of thinking we need to come back and do a whole episode about that. But
yes, if, please.
Okay. If you were to give us any small tip right now before we if it's okay with you and you're willing, I'd love to have you back to like really dig into those things, because I know so many families are desperate and hurting, and I think we need to get an episode out about that. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you would encourage those families right now, or professionals that are just at a loss what to do?
I think with our families who are experiencing an FASD, first of all, it's 1 in 20 kids. The stat from the CDC is this 1 in 20 kids in the United States school age that are impacted by a fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. That's wow. More than autism and some other things combined. So it's very prevalent in our communities, wow. But it's a topic that hasn't been addressed over time in regards to services.
Sorry. Can yes. you back up 1 in 20 foster kids or 1 in 20 kids?
1 in 20 kids.
In our country.
In our country. Yes.
Goodness gracious. Okay. Yeah.
And in regards to foster care, out of the kids in foster care with an FASD, 89% of them are misdiagnosed. They're misdiagnosed with AD. I mean, we could talk for days. But
okay, we are going to.
Yes.
One thing they could do, or one thing you would encourage them as far as like something to do through the lens of TBRI, some service to try to get, like, what would you tell them? And then I promise you, dear listeners, we will come back for this.
So I would say one of the biggest pieces of advice, if somebody comes through our doors and they know TBRI, and their child is impacted by prenatal exposure to alcohol, or their child is experiencing some neurodivergency, there's two fundamental things that we want to do. We want to help the family understand the diagnosis, help them understand what's happening in the brain as okay. different than just trauma. Those okay. are two completely different things. If I have a child who's just experiencing, and I say that very loosely, yes. right? Just experiencing trauma. The road to healing is much different than a child who comes with some neurodiversity as a result of alcohol. And so okay. helping the family really understand what's happening with the child and helping the child come to know and understand what's happening with their brain. They're experiencing mm-hmm. it every day, but they have no idea why. And so when we do that, then we're going to put emphasis on adjusting our environment. So in the TBRI lens, we're looking at heavy empowering portion of TBRI for kids who have prenatal exposure to alcohol is where we put massive amounts of attention.
Okay.
So it's this idea of the child's brain is functioning in such a way that these interventions might not change the child's brain, but this environment is set up to match what's happening in the child's brain. Therefore, the child can have success and the family can have success. And that's different than just trauma. Mm-hmm. The empowering pieces are where we put tons and tons of our energy. We're going to put most of our energy in changing the environment mm-hmm. versus trying to change the child. And then for many of our kids, they become overwhelmed really quickly with multiple choices. So with somebody who's experiencing neurodivergency, we're going to, like, we walk into our snack room with kids who are experiencing trauma, there's baskets of snacks in there. They love it. There's so many choices. They get so excited. They're sweet. They're salty. There's all these things. Uh-huh. With our kids who are experiencing neurodivergency, I ask them to stay outside of the kitchen, and I go in and I pick two snacks and I bring it out and I say, which one would you like? Because when they walk into the kitchen and they see all those snacks, they freeze. They just completely freeze up. It's too much. And that's just the way their brain is functioning. They're perfectly happy with the two I bring out. Matter of fact, it's more satisfying to them than to see all of these snacks. So there's so many of those just little twists that we want to pay attention to help somebody have success if that's what they're experiencing.
Okay. Well, geez, I feel like we could have spent all day long and not gotten to the bottom of everything that, you know, you're doing and you're done. And thank you for spending this time with us. We are so grateful, and we will definitely have to get another episode scheduled to talk more about FASD, particularly. Cindy Lee, thank you for being here. We are so grateful for you and your work.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
The TBRI podcast is produced by the Care and Purpose Institute of Child Development at TCU. To learn more about TBRI and the resources mentioned in this episode, please visit child.tcu.edu/podcast.